from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Forum listeners may recall our featuring an extraordinary Appalachian woman from West Virginia named Marie Gunnow, who was one of the winners of the 2009 coveted Goldman Environmental Prize. Her battle was against the mining companies engaged in blowing off the tops of mountains to get at coal. And Coal River Mountain, Marie Gunnow's home grounds, has been the epicenter for the ongoing fight to keep the mountaintop in that area from being destroyed by the Massey Coal and Energy Company, which, though it's the nation's third largest coal company, has destroyed more mountaintops than all of the other mining companies combined. We learn all about this ongoing struggle and how and why it affects the rest of us in a new documentary film called The Last Mountain, which features Marie Gunnow and others involved in the fight, including NRDC Senior Attorney Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who joins us in studio for this forum segment. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Well, where do we begin? This film really affected me, I have to tell you. I mean, the opening where you see that beauty of Appalachia, and then you go into understanding to what extent we are dependent upon electricity because we're dependent upon coal. It's eye-opening because it's all tied in with power plants and it's all tied in with global warming and everything is so interconnected. But the what grabbed me most of all, I have to tell you, is a human story. And it's really a story about democracy.
Yeah, it is. It is a story about democracy, and we don't need to be doing it. Everybody admits that this kind of coal mining does not need to be taking place. It's destroying jobs. It's destroying prosperity, even in Appalachia. It's a huge net loss for Appalachia. But they're doing something that is illegal. You couldn't do anywhere else in this country. If you tried to fill 25 miles of a Hudson River stream, we would put you in jail. If you blew up a mountain in the Sierras or in California or the Berkshires or the Catskills, you'd probably be put in a place for the criminally insane. But in Appalachia, over the past 10 years, they have cut down the 500 biggest mountains in one state, in the state of West Virginia. They flatten an area of Appalachia that is larger than the state of Delaware. They have filled not 25 feet, but 2,500 miles of rivers and streams, all illegally. And the only way for them to get away with it is by subverting democracy and by hiding what they're doing from the public. And they do that very effectively. Last year, I debated Don Blankenship, who is the head of Massey Energy and who's destroyed more jobs and more mountaintops than any human being probably in the history of the world. And I said to him, by his own admissions, his company had 67,000 violations of the Clean Water Act over the previous 5 years and tens of thousands of violations of mine safety, health laws, and other environmental laws. And I said to him, is it possible for your company to make a profit without violating the law? And he said, no, it's not. And then he went on to say that these were a lot of silly laws. But he admitted, essentially, that what he was running was a criminal enterprise. And their business plan is to violate the law and then dismantle democracy so they can get away with it. So that they've turned West Virginia into a company town that's run by corporations, and
with the complicity and involvement of the governor,
with every level of government, there's no democracy left in West Virginia. If you're you have no private property rights. If you're a property owner and you have boulders, as we show on this in the movie, raining down on your property, poison dust, your children being poisoned, your well being poisoned, your river drying up, you have no rights to protest. You have no rights to participate in zoning laws or planning board laws that would restrict mountaintop removal mining. There's no transparency left in government. Everything which is the hallmark of democracy, everything's done in secret. The agency that's supposed to protect West Virginians from pollution, the West Virginia DEP, has been captured by the agency it's supposed to regulate. It's really a sock puppet or an instrumentality of the coal industry. The judiciary has been corrupted so much so that even this right-wing pro-corporate U.S. Supreme Court rebuked the West Virginia Supreme Court last year for being in bed with big coal. And virtually every politician in the state of West Virginia, as we show in this movie, has been corrupted by the industry. Two-thirds of the people in West Virginia want to see mountaintop removal stopped forever and immediately, but there's not a single elected politician in the state who will dare to say that.
Talking to Robert F. Kennedy, senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, his work is featured in the new documentary, The Last Mountain, which was an official selection at Sundance, by the way, and a very affecting film, as I said earlier. And part of what got to me was just, again, the struggle of these people who want to simply stay where they are, who want to live where they are. I must tell you, though, you know, I mean, you use a lot of these characterizations. You did it in the film and you're doing it here about criminal activity. And in fact, I think you say bank robbers in the film. You make the analogy, you talk about if American people really were apprised of what was going on, there would be a revolution and so forth. But when you talk directly to, and Blankenship is an easy villain, but when you talk directly to a lot of these miners, they're saying to you, these are our jobs, you know. And yet the irony is, do they really understand that their jobs are also being replaced by people like Blankenship?
Well, you know, we saw the same thing in this state, in Northern California, back in the 1980s when the lumber industry was actually was shrinking jobs, but and blaming the loss of the last few jobs on the environmental community. The same thing is happening in Appalachia. When my father was fighting strip mining in Appalachia back in the 60s, I recall a conversation I had with him when I was 14 years old where he said, they're not just destroying the environment, they're permanently impoverishing these communities because there's no way to regenerate an economy from these barren moonscapes that are left behind. But he said they're doing it so they can break the unions. And that's exactly what they did. When he told me that there were 151,000 unionized mine workers in West Virginia digging coal out of tunnels in the ground, today there are fewer than 15,000 miners left. There's more people who work in Kmart in West Virginia. They've eliminated 9 out of 10 jobs. And it's not the environmental laws that have constricted those jobs. It's a ruthless, merciless, relentless strategy by Massey and its competitors to replace jobs with dynamite and with explosives and machinery. Today, they detonate 2,500 tons of ammonia nitrate explosives every day in West Virginia.
It's like a Hiroshima bomb.
It's a Hiroshima bomb once a week. And that's the way they've gotten rid of workers. They don't have to go into the ground to dig, you know, tunnels anymore. The UMW has been broken in the state. Fewer than half the miners in the state are unionized. And if you go to work for Massey Coal, there's a coal miner in this film. And he has a wonderful description. He said he was a union miner when he went over to Massey, and he said it was like going from darkness from the light into the darkness. He said there's a starting time, but there is no quitting time. And you work for that company for 25 years, and you're getting $15 an hour. And meanwhile, the CEO, Don Blankenship, is making $38 million a year. He makes more than all the shareholders combined. So this is not about enriching Appalachia. In fact, you know, this is an out-of-state company. All the profits leave the state. They go up to Wall Street. This is about enriching one guy, Don Blankenship, who's running this company, who puts the people, the communities, the workers into this kind of meat grinder. And out comes a big profit for him and permanent poverty left behind.
Do a lot of them see you, though, as the – I mean, I got that sense in the film as the out-of-state interloper, you know, the liberal who's come here to tell us essentially how we should comport ourselves when we're native West Virginians and he's not. And I mention that with all due respect of recognizing that you kept coming back to this area as a kid. It was like – I mean, it's part of the film is your own – personal involvement with it. You have sons who have asthma, and you know the reality of it is that you do have a personal stake in it.
Well,
you looked at as the interloper, aren't you?
You know, that's the talking point for Massey, but I say Massey Coal is the interloper. Massey Coal, none of these coal companies are located in West Virginia, and Massey Coal won't even hire normally. It doesn't want to hire West Virginia miners because there's a union culture in West Virginia. So when it wants these miners, it goes out of state. And it advertises at Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It advertises in the Atlanta Constitution and in USA Today for people to come into the state. And it takes the miners, and it's a very tiny handful of jobs. You know, there's more jobs today in the wind industry in America than there is in coal mining.
Well, in fact, the wind industry becomes, to some extent, the solution for this problem, at least as far as the movie presents it.
Mm. But, you know, Massey brings these miners, these small teams of miners, onto a ridgeline. They cut down. It takes them usually 8 years, 5 to 8 years to cut down the ridgeline. Then they move them to another site in the state. And so they're not local people. They're people who have, you know, been brought from out of the state and who are instrumentalities for Massey to remove the wealth from West Virginia. My father used to say about West Virginia, it's the richest state in the country if you looked at the resources in the state, but it's 49th in terms of the poverty of its people. And Mississippi is the only poor state. Coal has not brought prosperity to this state. It's brought poverty, sickness, injury, and destruction.
Well, and we're also talking about something that is contributing mightily to our ongoing carbon footprint and the reality of global warming. In the documentary, Robert Kennedy confronted Bill Rainey, the president of the West Virginia Coal Association, in a local restaurant, and he charged the coal industry with ignoring environmental and labor concerns in order to generate profits for Wall Street. Rainey responded to Robert Kennedy with a challenge, and I thought we'd hear this.
Don't preach about it. Be like my guys. Go build ponds and fix controlled drainage. I mean, don't be a screamer out in the hallway. Go take care of it. That's what the people that work in my industry are doing. They're practicing environmentalists. They really are.
Now, the film did this. It was clever editing because after he said they're practicing environmentalists, you see the top of a mountain blow up, which our listeners just heard, and that's obviously intentional. But that's practicing environmentalism.
Right. I mean, there's nothing. The thing about this industry is they have to lie to the public about what they're doing because nobody would put up with this. And one of the ways they do that is people even in Charleston don't realize this is happening. If you the people who see this, the people who live in the hollows, and their communities are being uprooted and destroyed. You drive through Appalachia and you see boarded up buildings, and the coal companies are deliberately depopulating deliberately depopulating rural Appalachia. And we went through town after town after town.
They're like ghost towns, man.
They're ghost towns. Yeah. The churches are boarded up. The schools are boarded up. The houses are boarded up. And they pressure the people one by one to leave. They sign contracts with them saying they can't come back to the region. Then they blow up their houses. And then they blow up the streams, the rivers, the mountains, and bury the place. And it's just a pile of rubble when they leave. They take out a tremendous amount of coal. But it's not making anybody rich except for Don Blankenship.
Again, we're talking to Robert F. Kennedy. I'm going to open up the phone lines. I know many of you would like to get into this conversation, and you have an opportunity to do that now, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Questions or comments for our guest, Robert Kennedy. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Again, you can join us now at that number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. You've had a lot of criticism, particularly from Sean Hannity, about flying around in chartered jets and saying, you know, that that's eating up the environment and presenting more of a problem with global warming than a lot of the concerns that you as an environmentalist talk about. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't spend a lot of time traveling around in chartered jets. That's a way that Sean Hannity avoids the issue here, which is how are we going to switch to a new energy economy? How are we going to transition to that? And I'm from a personal perspective, my home is a power plant. I produce it's powered by geothermal. It's powered by two solar systems. It produces a lot more energy than we use, and we put that energy back into the grid. But I also am on the board of the biggest green tech venture capital firm in the country. We're building power plants, LED lights, electric cars that like the Tesla and Better Place. But one of the projects that we have is a project, our portfolio companies that we started is called Bright Source, and it's here in California. And it's right now constructing one of the biggest power plants in American history in the Mojave Desert. It's 2.7 gigawatts of power, and it's a solar plant. It's a solar thermal plant. We're building it in 3 years. It costs it takes a coal plant at least 10 years to do construction. It takes a nuke plant 30 years. The cost of a coal plant is the same as ours, $3 billion a gigawatt. The cost of a nuke plant is five times that. So we're building this power plant for one-fifth the cost that you could build a nuke plant, and we're building it far quicker. And once you build our plant, it's free energy forever. Once you build that coal plant for the same $3 billion a gigawatt, now you've got to go cut down the Appalachians. The big costs are just beginning. Ship them across the country in rail yards, on railroads, which warps every rail in this country, which is why we can't have high-speed rail in America. And you have to burn the coal, poison literally every fish in America with mercury, kill 60,000 people a year with ozone and particulates, cause 10 million asthma attacks, a million lost workdays, sterilize the lakes of the Appalachians and the Adirondacks with acid rain and destroy the forest cover and destroy the Appalachian Mountains. So all of those costs occur after you build the plant. Once you build an oil plant for the same $3 billion, now you've got to go to Saudi Arabia, punch holes in the ground, bring up the oil, refine it expensively, genuflect the sheiks who despise democracy and are hated by their own people, get in periodic wars that cost $3 trillion, escort the oil across the Atlantic with a military escort that Exxon doesn't pay for, you and I do, spill it all over the Gulf, spill it all over Valdez, then burn the oil and poison everybody in the country. And that cost starts after you build the $3 billion oil plant. Once you build our plant, it's free energy forever.
The answer becomes clean energy, and certainly we get the message there. But in the film, there's all this emphasis on wind, and you're talking about like up in Portsmouth, Rhode Island, wind energy and so forth. What you've mentioned, well, sort of leaves out wind, doesn't it? Or does it?
Well, wind is, you know, we have the greatest wind resource of any country in the world. North Dakota is the Saudi Arabia of wind. We have enough wind energy in just North Dakota, Montana, and Texas to provide 100% of the energy needs of Canada and the United States three times over, even if every American owned an electric car. So wind is part of the picture. Wind tends to blow at night. It doesn't follow peak as closely, doesn't track peak load demand as closely as solar does. And the pace of innovation in wind is not as quick as solar. The costs of solar are dropping so dramatically and so quickly right now. I had lunch the other day with David Crane, who's the head of NRG, which is one of the biggest energy producers in the country. And he says, you know, we're bullish about solar because the pace of innovation in solar is so dramatic today and the costs are dropping cascading so quickly that you're going to see we're already at grid parity. We can produce, even with the giant subsidies to the coal industry, we can produce wind power essentially at the same cost as we can produce coal. And once you build the plant, it's free energy forever. We have 500 gigawatts. We use 1,000 gigawatts at peak demand in America. 500 of those are carbon-based. To replace those with wind and solar would cost about $3 trillion. And that's less than the cost of the Iraq War. And then we have free energy forever, which is the biggest permanent tax break that ever occurred in our country.
Forgive me. You've got a lot of people who want to talk with you, and I do want to go to calls and emails. But let me ask you first, if you could just stake out for us quickly your position on cap and trade, because the organization you work with, NRDC, is supporting it as part of AB 32, the Assembly Bill 32. But the Sierra Club and a number of environmental justice groups are opposing it.
Well, you know, you're talking about the Waxman-Markey bill?
Right.
The Waxman-Markey bill is dead at this point. So it's not, you know, the Senate has killed it. It's not going to happen. The Sierra Club, and there was a split in the environmental community because there were so many compromises made.
Actually, I'm not talking about the Waxman-Markey bill. I misspoke. We're talking about Assembly Bill here in California.
Oh, here in California.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not that familiar with the bill that's here in California. I mean, cap and trade, generally speaking, it's a good thing. You want to put a price on carbon. You know, it's a market-based mechanism that will that promotes innovation and says to people, you can't just dispose of your waste into our commons. You're going to have to pay something to put it there, and those payments are going to increase annually, and they're going to cause a wave of innovation where we reward people in the marketplace for thinking of new ways and developing of new ways to reduce carbon. So generally speaking, cap and trade systems are a good thing, but a lot of times you have to make compromises in order to get them passed, and that's probably why there's a split within the environmental community here. But I can't speak with any authority on it.
Well, we're going to get to our callers, and yet here's somebody who seems to be speaking with some authority about wind, because we've been talking about wind. He said, please ask Mr. Kennedy why his family has been so opposed to the Cape Wind offshore wind farm, which when built will be about the size of a coal power plant, 420 megawatts. The wind farm will dramatically reduce air pollution in the region and would potentially offer the demand for coal removed via the mountaintop process. Although the Kennedy family in general has a wonderful environmental record, it was shocking to how they reacted when a clean power plant, that is the wind farm, was proposed in their backyard.
Well, I opposed Cape Wind. I originally opposed Cape Wind because I was approached by the fishing community. I got into the environmental movement through commercial fishermen. I've worked hand in hand with the commercial fishermen on the Cape for 27 years. They've been our partners in every environmental battle to keep longliners out of Nantucket Sound, to keep the drift nets out, to control development on the Cape so we have the best development policies, best for development controls probably of any place in the country. And they came to me and said, you know, there's this proposal that's going to put every one of us out of business. They're going to put this wind farm on Horseshoe Shoals, which is 63% of the catch. We won't be able to get our gear in there. They have a sustainable fishery, and it's the wrong place to put it. We got a lot of wind in Massachusetts and New England. Right now, we have power available, green power available, including wind farms that my brother is involved with in Maine and other parts of New England, where we can provide power to Massachusetts for 6 cents a kilowatt hour. The Cape Wind Project is providing power at 25 cents a kilowatt hour in addition to billions and billions of dollars of federal subsidies. I'm against those kind of subsidies. I don't think that we should have them. I think we should have a free market system, and that, you know, if you built the Cape Wind Project, Massachusetts ratepayers will be paying the highest rate in the country. It will cost hundreds to thousands of dollars per year for every ratepayer in the state, and it's going to turn everybody against wind. Why would we do that with this giant boondoggle offshore project that essentially was proposed during the Bush administration, and it benefits members of the Bush family? And it's a boondoggle. Anybody who can make $25 a kilowatt hour can be a billionaire.
Okay, hold that
this
thought.
This is a bad project. It's a boondoggle, and we can get green wind energy for about a fifth the price by doing it onshore.
Let me bring our callers on. Let me go first to Boris in San Francisco. Join us. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Recently, I've seen in the news that there's either a planned or maybe went through acquisition of Massey. And I was wondering if your guests could comment on that and how that's going to affect the ability to actually do anything, or if they're going to be hiding behind this acquisition. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Yeah. There's right now an attempt by Alpha, which is a big energy company, to take over Massey. And the purpose of it seems to be to shield the Massey board from various criminal investigations and indictments and lawsuits and civil lawsuits that are planned because of the criminal activities of the company. It was originally presented that Don Blankenship would be phased out. He's made $190 million in cash over the past 10 years, and he was going to be phased out. But we've now seen documents that show that there was a secret deal that Don Blankenship will still be running things in West Virginia. So the Alpha deal is a bad deal, and it's just a way of protecting the existing Massey board from lawsuits and liabilities of their criminal behavior over the past decade.
On we go to Stephen in San Rafael. Thanks for waiting, Stephen. Join us.
Yeah, thank you. My comment would just be that this is so convincing and seems like something that would appeal to people on the right and the left as something that needs to be stopped. And how can we get this and get it more exposure on a national level so that people truly understand what's happening and can work together?
Isn't that part of the hope of the movie, Robert Kennedy?
Well, yeah, and, you know, documentaries today are playing an increasingly important role because we see the devolution of the American press. We've seen this giant takeover since Ronald Reagan abolished the Fairness Doctrine in 1988. You've seen a takeover of the American press by five giant corporations who now control virtually all 14,000 radio stations in our country, all 2,200 TV stations, 80% of the newspapers, all of the billboards, and most of the large internet content providers. So there's five guys who are deciding what we hear as news. They no longer have an obligation to serve the public interest as they had under the Fairness Doctrine for 100 years. Their only obligation today is to their shareholders, and they serve that obligation not by informing the public of the issues that we need to know to make rational decisions in our democracy, but rather by entertaining us, by telling us, you know, about J-Lo and Brad and Jen.
Or Robert Kennedy dating Cheryl Hines.
Or Charlie Sheen or what have you.
Which is why public radio is...
We're the best entertained and least informed people on the face of the world.
Can I interrupt you and just say, which is why we think of ourselves as an oasis here?
Right. So this is an oasis, and documentary filmmaking has become one that has stepped in also to fill that vacuum. People wouldn't know about fracking in this country if it weren't for Gaslands. Very few people would understand the importance of global warming, the potential impacts if it weren't for Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth. And
by the way, I have a listener who says call it global climate change rather than global warming. The concept of warming is too difficult for many of the uninformed citizenry. That comes from a listener via email. And Waiting for Superman certainly raised a lot of issues, just like this film is doing. But this film is really crucial, I think, for many people, for citizens to become aware. Where can they see it? And they can see you at the Commonwealth Club this evening, by the way. Robert Kennedy will be there at 6 tonight, but the film is being distributed throughout the country?
Yes, the film is being distributed around the country, and it's opening. There's a premiere tonight in San Francisco.
And quickly, because we're running out of time, listeners want to know, where's the EPA in all this? Now, that's a whole hour in itself, I realize, but there has been movement in the film. It seems like Obama has finally maybe gotten off the stick in this administration has.
The EPA has an important role to play. We have probably the best EPA administrator that we've ever had in American history, Lisa Jackson. She's done a tremendous job in at least slowing down the pace of mountaintop removal mining. The administration needs to support her in doing more. And there's some critical decisions actually being made.
Maybe
this
brighter
week.
Times ahead, one can hope. Huh? Robert Kennedy, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Robert Kennedy's here to essentially promote the new documentary, The Last Mountain. Go see it. I saw it. I was very moved by it. Like I said, the human stories are quite moving. You're listening to Forum. Oscar Iwelos will join us in studio in the next hour. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.